So if I give you at its core what the nine bodies is, it is a meditative practice. It's just like any other meditative practice. It is a practice that uses consciousness as its object of meditation. That's just basically what it is. And this consciousness that it uses is at various levels of awareness. And so there are nine levels of consciousness that we could become aware of. And these levels of consciousness have their own objects and their own, I guess you could say, ways of perceiving a given moment. So I'm going to give it to you, sort of explain it in the easiest way I think I can explain it. And then I want to take a step back and explain why I think it's so important of a practice. So right here, right now, every one of us is observing this moment from some level of consciousness. Some of you might be aware of this moment based on what is called the first layer of consciousness, which would be physical. So that means you're paying attention or you're aware that you're in this present moment because you can see me on the screen, because you are feeling your body sitting in the chair or on the couch or the cushion, because you are sensing the temperature, or you're having some kind of connection with the physical moment. And that's how you know, that's how you are aware of this present moment. Some of you might be connecting to this moment through a different level of consciousness, not just physicality. You may be noticing your level of aliveness right now. You might be experiencing, oh, I'm so tired, the energy is low. Or you might be as upbeat as I am excited about this moment, but that's probably not as many of you on that level. But there could be that sense of heaviness and tiredness. Don't really have a lot of energy for this. I'm interested, but I could feel my body. I could feel the tiredness in the body. So your mind and your consciousness and this moment is centered around your level of vitality right now. And then for some of you still, the whole moment of experience can be based on some emotional energy you're feeling. It could be excitement. You could still be thinking about something that happened earlier in the day, and your emotional level is like on the what we would call a negative or unpleasant emotion. Could be any emotional energy, but this moment, whatever's happening, we could be experiencing it from those three different aspects of consciousness. Those three are linked together and intertwined and referred to in this practice as the manifest bodies. I'll explain later why they're called bodies, but they're just intertwined as bodies. But there are other levels of consciousness that we sometimes come in and out of also, especially as practitioners. So these manifest bodies, these three, a sense of vitality, emotional energies, or just this grounded physicality, we kind of reside in that mostly. But there are other levels of consciousness that we all have connection to. The first layer in this second set of levels of consciousness is, these are called the subtle bodies. And the first layer is what's called etheric. And what it really is connected to is a sense of spaciousness. So we just had this meditation, and you may be connected to a sense of spaciousness. You're sitting here, you're present, but really there's a more settled, spacious energy right here. That's what you're mostly aware of. Still others can be connected to what's called the astral body, which is another level of consciousness. You may be lost in some daydream, some fantasy. I'm sitting here, but that meditation kind of brought up something I need to be working on, and I'm still thinking about that. I'm sitting here, I'm looking, I see Tawari, I know, I see people, but really my mind is off dealing with this thing that I got to deal with. It's this capacity of consciousness to be separated from the physical body. So the physical body is in one place, but the mind is somewhere else. And you might be in that somewhere else. So we're all in this present moment. We're all connected, but your consciousness is somewhere else. The third level of consciousness that we can have is what's called that second level is called the astral body. And this third level is called the intuitional body. And in the intuitional body, you can be sitting here and you're hearing my words and you are connected to a level of stillness that it just, you're just here. It's just right now here. And the words are touching into a level of knowing, a stillness, a level of knowing. Like sometimes when we read poetry, we can touch this. There's a way in which we're touching into a knowing, not the words, but the knowing, a deeper kind of wise knowing. And then there's a third level that's called the causal bodies. These are the last three levels of consciousness that we could have. And the first in that consciousness is called spiritual. It's the spiritual body. In the spiritual body, there's an awareness of the, I guess the best way to say it is the lawfulness of this moment, right? There's a sense of this moment is the way it's supposed to be. There's an interconnectedness with everything. I'm interconnected with all of you, and this moment is unfolding as it's unfolding, because this is the way it should unfold. So you're just watching the unfolding of a lawfulness about the moment. And we can sense into that sense of lawfulness, that sense of this moment being as it should be. It just feels right. We could sense into that. But these levels of consciousness are not manifest. So it's those times when you experience something. Probably the best way I can explain it is like someone, like when my sister died, there was a lawfulness about that death. It's not like I wasn't sad, but there was I understand. Yeah, her diabetes got out of control. And yeah, we never could get it back in control. Oh, I understand what happened. I don't like it, but I understand what happened. There's that, That's our spiritual level of consciousness that supports us in being able to hold things like that. The second level of consciousness in these causal bodies is called the divine body. And the divine body is having a sense of purpose being here. And so because these aren't manifest, again, it's hard to describe it. I can show you a picture. Like when you see the picture of the Buddha touching the ground, that would be his connection to the divine body. Because at the time he touched the ground, the way the story goes, he was being battered by Mara, this sense of, you know, in Buddhist cosmology, it would be the devil, what we would call the devil. He's getting beat by all this negativity and threatened and challenged and judged and pushed. And so he touched the ground in a sense of, I have a right to be here. I have a right to awaken. This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is where I want to be. And so his moment was, his level of consciousness in that moment was centered around his right to be in that moment right there. This, it's not a mistake. That feeling we get sometimes when we feel this sense of, yes, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I know where I belong. I know where I'm at. This is not a mistake. I didn't stumble upon something and it's not for me. This is mine. That sense. And then the last one is what's called the cosmic body, which you can't even feel at all. And you can't really even describe it. But there's a level of consciousness that connects us universally to life itself. And every once in a while, we can experience that. Some people, I think, would experience that more as a knowing that there is something greater than me that is part of this moment. It's more like that. I guess some people could experience these causal bodies as God, but you have to be careful with that because we have so much judgment around who God is, what God is, the whole God thing. And you can end up, you can overlay our judgments about God on these bodies, but these bodies are not some outer experience God. These bodies are every one of our bodies that exist in every single one of us as a human being. They come with the human being package, not that you have to somehow or another do something to connect to the God. So you have to be careful with that, even though I do have a sense of God. So I do have a sense of connection with God, but I would think of it as the expansive, unlimitless aspect of God, not this kind of maybe God that I grew up with, the image I grew up with, him as a him up in heaven, not that. So it's not to say, I don't want to completely shut off any idea of spirituality or God quality, but the experience of that is just your own opinion about it. But it's not, the bodies themselves have nothing to do with God. It's consciousness. It's a way of perceiving and conceiving a particular moment in time. And that's what I think all these bodies are. So that's the nine of them. And the nine bodies themselves, they came from, so Philip Moffat is this spirit rock, kind of a pretty famous meditation teacher, insight practitioner, teacher. And he went to India. He's a yoga person. So he was heavily into yoga for many, many years. And not the kind of trendy yoga that we kind of think of now, like going down to the Power Yoga Center. Not that kind of yoga. I'm talking about the level of yoga like he was a yogini. He was studying yoga in all its spiritual and mystic avenues. This kind of yogic way of coming into samadhi, deep concentration. And he heard about a teacher that could help him. He had some kind of difficulty with his throat chakra, and he heard about a teacher that could kind of help him with it. And so he went to the ashram where that teacher was. And Philip tells the story that basically the ashram wasn't that impressive. He wasn't even that impressive with the teacher. But when he got ready to leave, first, after he talked a little bit, the teacher says, oh, well, you got to see the ashram. So Philip was like, okay, I came to work on my throat. What? I'll see the ashram. I guess the teacher gave him, the teacher's name is Balyogi Pambarni. And Pambarni. And so when this teacher gave Philip his instructions about what to do about the throat, then he showed him around the ashram. Wasn't that much to see. Philip was getting ready to leave, and he stops him at the gate and says, you know, what are you doing? Where are you going? How long are you going to be here? And Philip said, I'm going to be here for, you know, a couple of weeks. I'm going back to the States. He goes, oh, well, you can't leave right now. You have to stay here. And so Philip was like, he doesn't know this guy. He's not that impressed with this guy. But he said this was a moment. The way he described it was a moment when he knew this is where he was supposed to be. He didn't know why. He didn't understand it. It's a level of consciousness that he had a knowing that this is where he's supposed to be. This is what he's supposed to be doing. And so he stayed. He canceled all his plans that he had for the trip he was going to go around and where he was going to go. And he stayed right there at this ashram and studied with this teacher. And that began this relationship that lasted over a course of 15 years. I mean, it's still, Balyogi is still alive today, and Philip is still practicing with him, and the two of them are still close. But this was over 15 years ago. So over the course of this connection, Balyogi kept wanting Philip to write a book about his practices. Write a book. And the practices that are what we call the nine bodies, it's Balyogi calls them the nine bodies. And the way he got this was he did some meditation, and it lasted for 3 days. And those, when he came out of those 3 days, and I mean, just like we sit for 30 minutes and, you know, the last 10 minutes, we're kind of like counting the clock down, checking it to make sure it's not going too far. That kind of meditation, he sat 3 full days and didn't get up, didn't eat, didn't move. At the end of those 3 days, he didn't know he was sitting 3 days. But at the end of those 3 days is when he was told that he sat down and he had stayed for 3 days. And then he wrote out this practice that had came to him during this 3 days. So in Indian traditional understanding, there was the gross bodies. It would be the gross level. It's what it was called, the gross level. There's the subtle level, and then there's the causal levels. And Philip describes in the book how Balyogi understood those levels to be even more divided into these nine levels. And that's what he created. That's what he wrote up, was this system that there are nine levels. And then one more thing about Balyogi is that he also drew these illustrations to describe the process that the mind and body goes through in this existence that we have on these different levels. So Philip, over the course of all these years, he began to practice with Bal Yogi and learn all this stuff, and eventually he wrote this book. But like I was saying in the beginning, when Philip started teaching this practice, he's a Vipassana teacher, so he taught Vipassana. And now I want to spend some time talking about how I think this system that Bal Yogi came up with as a Vipassana practitioner can be quite a gift for our practice, can be very supportive in creating a space that we can release ourselves from dukkha. So I want to start with a quote from His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama. And he said, right now, here at this moment, you have a mind which is all the basic equipment you need to achieve complete happiness. Right now. So it does, I don't care where you've gone, what you've gone through, what your life's been like, how it's been, what have you done right now, with all the mess you carry with you, right now, you have a mind which has all the basic equipment that you need for complete happiness. Every time I think about that, I read that quote all the time. I wrote it down on a little envelope and I carry it with me all the time. Think about it. What in the world? So think about, I want you to take a moment and think about something. I want you to think about all the things and efforts you put into in order to be happy. So think about all the education that you thought you needed so you could be happy. All the jobs you tried to get. Money. How much money you need so you can be happy, surely. All the friends and partners you thought you had to have, because that's what's going to make you happy. Even though some of you guys, you know, after you got them partners, you were like, maybe that wasn't it. But how much we put around our food we eat? How much energy do we put in exercising? How much do we obsess over things like therapy, and I gotta learn this and I gotta learn that. All this effort to try, all of that is based in a theory to try to get happy. That's what it all is. Everything we've ever done in our life is in the pursuit of trying to be happy. And because that's what we've been pursuing our whole lives, we all know this. I mean, we're practitioners. We hear it. Every Dhamma talk starts out like this almost, right? That's what I think. But yet I still strive for happiness. And all of that includes all the criticism that we give ourselves when we don't get these things that we think we need in order to be happy. But that is in direct conflict with this idea that right now, in this moment, not next moment, not next year, not as soon as this happens, right now, in this moment, you have a mind which is all the basic equipment you need to achieve complete happiness. If what His Holiness is saying is true, then the Buddha was pointing to something other than feeling happy. that fear, like when I graduated from law school, I would say I was happy. I mean, that was a great day. My mother came. I never went to any graduation until I graduated from law school and I went to my hoodie. I didn't even go to the big, huge graduation that you go through. I went to that hooding ceremony and my mother was there and my kids were there. And I'm clearly going to tell you, I was happy. But I felt happy. You know, I had a sense of pleasure. The whole day was pleasurable. But I think the Buddha was pointing to something other than that, other than this felt sense of pleasure. I think what the Buddha was pointing to, the happiness that the Buddha was pointing to, the closest I could think of a way to describe it, is embodied wisdom. There is a level of wisdom that is completely unconnected to a sense of pleasure, and it's connected to a sense of knowing. There's an internal knowing that the body carries. And that knowing, when we are connected to it, there's a level of happiness that I think the Buddha was pointing to. And I think it's remarkable that he used, the same word, because sometimes we translate things in English that aren't necessarily the same word. But if the Buddha used the same word happiness like we do in English, happiness meaning pleasurable and happiness meaning this embodied wisdom, I think that's remarkable that he would do that. Because what he would be basically talking, like I'm talking to you, like, we're always searching for happiness, 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 happiness. And yet all the stuff that actually should make us happy, and it does make us happy, it's just so fleeting. So if he's talking about a level of happiness that's more constant, that's more steady, always there, it has to come from the only thing that's always with you, and that's your body. There's a wisdom level in the body that's always with you. A way to think about this. I don't know how many of you guys have ever tried this with an infant, but a brand new baby. I mean, brand new. It's only like a few days old. If you hold them up by their little arms, and you kind of move them towards you, their little feet will walk towards you. They can't hold themselves up and they can't walk, but their feet know what to do if you kind of pull them towards you. I can't believe that. They know how to walk already. It's embodied within them. This capacity for walking is already embodied in their own understanding. You could think about, I've told some people that this realization that hits me that the body will process food. I don't care what you eat. If you put food in there, it's going to process it. So you can eat junk food, you can eat healthy food, you can eat paper sacks. And it's going to process it. It may not understand why you're eating the paper sack because it's really not helping you. No nutrients in there, but you could eat it and the body can process it. Because the body's capacity to digest and process food has nothing to do with us. It's an embodied wisdom. It knows how to protect us. It knows how to even people who've experienced great trauma, the mind itself will take us somewhere else so we don't have to experience that trauma. There's a way in which our body knows how to deal with life. It has an embodied level of wisdom already there. There's a famous story where the Buddha, there was a guy that was like a seer, and he came to the Buddha and he said, you know, you have to believe in kind of, you know, stories. But he was like a spirit. I guess you could call him like a spirit or a seer. And he had traveled the world lifetimes looking for the end of suffering. The end of the world. He was looking for that. And he would die. And then he would come back to life. And he wouldn't even, he would just kept dying and coming back to life and dying and coming back to life. And he wouldn't stop. He just was roaming and roaming and roaming, just taking out time just to, you know, eat and defecate, eat and defecate, eat and defecate. I'm just looking, 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 trying to find a way to the end of suffering. And he could not find it. So he finally finds his way to the Buddha. Since the Buddha could talk to so many spirits. And he's like, what is going on here? I have tried to find the end of the world and I cannot find the end of the world. And the Buddha said, well, unless you find the end of the world, you're not going to ever free yourself from suffering. So yes, you have to find the end of the world in order to free yourself from suffering. But the Buddha said that he was looking in the wrong direction. That to find the end of the world is in this body right here, this fathom long body. So here this seer was traveling lifetimes after lifetimes after lifetimes, trying his best to find some wisdom out there that would teach him how to end suffering. And the Buddha was saying that that is not the end of suffering. It's in here. You don't need to go anywhere. You don't have to travel. You don't have to move away. You just have to be able and be willing to be with this fathom long body. And that is where our suffering, that's how we end suffering. Let me turn this other light on. Oh, my little lights aren't working. So I think what the Buddha was pointing to is awareness. I think he was pointing to the more you as a practitioner are aware, the more freedom you have. And the more freedom you have, the more you begin to know your experience based on an embodied wisdom rather than an intellectual wisdom. The more that you begin to trust this internal embodied experience, the more that you are going to be able to connect with a depth of wisdom that's inherent in the body. That's not something you have to go outside of yourself to get. Let's see what other things are we here. I'm not talking about a level of body connection. Like, do I like my body? Because a lot of us never get embodied because we're stuck on that, I don't like my body. And I understand that experience because for many, 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 many years as a practitioner, I had too much trauma in my body. So there was no way I was getting up in that body with it. Somehow I was going to get enlightened and leave the body behind. That, you know, like, I'm going to sit the body over there, but I, me, Tuere, I'm going to get enlightened. Yeah, I see some of you smiling because you know that is not possible. It's not possible. We have a lot of judgment about our bodies. We have a lot of judgment about the kind of body we have, about our limitations with this physical body. That means something's wrong with me. I have ADD. So you can imagine, if you don't have ADD, good for you. But if you do have ADD, then you understand how difficult it is to concentrate. The idea of concentration is the opposite of ADD because it's an attention deficit disorder. So my ability to attend is very difficult. So for a long time, I thought I can't get concentrated because I have ADD. Everybody else can get concentrated, not me. Totally not true. Yes, that's true. But I can, I don't know if you guys heard that, but my little, what do you call those little voices? They were telling me what ADD symptoms are. Thank you for sharing. I already know that. Modern times. Anyway, you could have pain and think to yourself, I got pain in my body. I can't do all of that. I think what Buddha was beginning to point to is that there is an aspect of body, not just this physical body here, but there's an aspect of body that lies more in our level of consciousness, our wisdom inherent in our bodies that we can access. And when I started practicing with the nine bodies, I began to understand Buddha's Dhamma much more up close and personal. Not from a learned experience, but from a felt sense. Let me give you an example. So in all the suttas I read, when you notice the Buddha, when somebody comes to the Buddha and say, give it to me dirty, quick and dirty. What's the easy way to get to enlightenment? Let's don't beat around the bush. Don't give me the long sermon discourse. Just give it to me quick. What do I need to do? And I'll be out of here. And there have been several people that have come to the Buddha and said that. My best friend is Bahia. But beyond Bahia, there are several people that have come to the Buddha. Brahmins and other people, monks would come to the Buddha and said, okay, can you just, it's just too complicated. Can you make it simple? Break it down to me. What do I need to know? And the Buddha's description and explanation would be the same all the time. Just be aware of the sense doors. Just be aware. He keeps pointing, just be aware, be aware, be aware. He doesn't point to stay with the breath, develop meditation, be aware, be aware, be aware, be aware. Here's another example. Even when he's talking about meditative practices, he always points to the awareness of the presence of something and the awareness of the absence of something. So it's not just, are you aware of breathing, but are you aware when you're not aware of breathing? It's not just, are you aware of a pleasant feeling tone, but are you aware of the absence of a pleasant feeling tone? So all of these practices, he's pointing to this awareness, being aware of and being aware of the absence of it. This awareness, awareness, awareness. One more example. I have two more. One is that in the discourses, sometimes he has these longer discourses where he's talking to monks or he's talking to lay people and he's trying to help people understand some concept. Let's say the hindrances, or let's say the dependent origination, all of these concepts, the five aggregates, all the lists that we study. And the way that he explains this to people is that he says, this is what a practitioner would do or understand. And this is what a non-practitioner would understand or do. This is how a practitioner would understand the moment. And this is how a non-practitioner would understand the moment. But as a practitioner, you got to be aware, am I understanding the moment like this, or am I understanding the moment like this? It's in the awareness of where you're at that's going to tell you whether or not you are connected to the wisdom that's liberating, or you're connected to the understanding that leads to more suffering. It's in your awareness of where you're at that begins to touch into how to know, how to move through life with less and less and less suffering. And the last thing is that when the Buddha talks about differences, opposites, so when we think of what is the opposite of harm, it's kindness. What is the opposite of hate? It's love. That's what we think, two different words. Buddha didn't talk like that. The opposite of harm is non-harm. The opposite of love is non-love. The opposite of hate is non-hate. He just put the anti in front of it, the non in front of it. So that is like this awareness of the presence of something and the absence of something. And all of this practice, the more and more and more you look and read the way the Buddha talked, it points more and more and more to this awareness, awareness, awareness. So if you're anything like me as a practitioner, this practicing of awareness, was always so convoluted to me. I couldn't quite understand how to practice this way. And so I would get lost often trying to be aware. And in this trying to be aware, I just was always looking, I guess is the best way. Not aware, but looking. And it can be very stressful. I did a lot of striving in meditation, trying to get to some level of awareness. And then I stumbled upon a practice one day with Philip. Philip came to Seattle Insight. And I had never spoken to Philip ever. I used to go to all his non-residentials. I just went to all the Sims non-residentials. That was the only way I could do extended practice. But I never spoke to Philip. And, because I usually was the only Black person in the room, and there were all these people in the room, and I'm in the back, and I'm just tucked in the back, just doing my little practices, not really thinking of paying attention to nothing. And Philip did a practice on the elements one year. And when he did that practice on the elements, oh my God, I had this capacity to be aware of the presence of the elements without doing anything. Like I could be aware of the sense of the earth element just because I could feel the qualities of earth. And I was aware that I was in earth element. And he went through that whole non-residential with these practices. And I remember going up to him, not even timidly. And I remember it because he gave me this look like, what did I do? Because I just walked right up to him and said, what are you teaching here? What's going on here? What are you teaching? And he just gave me this look like, did I do something offensive? Did I offend you? I'm really sorry if I did. And I was like, Philip, I can feel this sense of spaciousness. I don't even know where that comes from. What are you teaching? And he just laughed at me. He goes, I think this must just be your practice. This must be just where your practice should be. And then at the end of the retreat, he kind of touched into this idea of the nine bodies. But I didn't even wait for the book to come out. I signed up for the next month long, and I went there to study this at the month long. And so I'm 2 weeks into this month long, and he's still like, you know, just working with the regular stay with the breath. And I said, Philip, when are we going to get to the good stuff? In my interview, he said, the good stuff, Dory? I said, yeah, you know, the good stuff. That's what I came here for. I'm ready for that. That's what I want to study. He said, it's 2 weeks left. We really shouldn't start something new. And I was like, no, we're going to start that stuff now. And that's when he started teaching me more into the actual bodies. The book came out later, and then I was gone to the retreat, and then I went to that 3 month, and I did the whole nine bodies as that whole 3 months. And I got this understanding that I knew how to connect to awareness, because the bodies themselves lend themselves to a way to be aware. And I could feel it's a shifting of your attention, a resting back and allowing yourself to just be aware of what you are feeling, what you are experiencing. And in that experiencing, it's an opportunity to allow the bodies to come forward and speak to you, is basically the best way I can say it. Because all six of these bodies, the last three of the causal bodies are less felt sense. They're more of a knowing. But these six bodies, you can begin to experience the presence of them just with practice over and over and over and over of experiencing them. And you begin to experience them. And no one on this call, there are what, 54 people on this call? Some of us might have some things that sound familiar, but mostly everybody's going to have their own experience of it. And in that experience is how you begin to learn it. But you begin to connect with a level of embodiment that's not about whether you like your body or whether or not you think your body's in good shape. But it is based on connecting to the consciousness that's alive in your body at these various levels. So that's what we're going to work on this weekend. The only way we can work on this is through meditation. It's the only way to experience it. So the way that we do this is we're going to have three meditations on Saturday and three meditations on Sunday. And the first three, those three meditations on Saturday, we're going to go through the first three bodies. And then on Sunday, we're going to go through the other three bodies. And then Sunday evening, we're going to go through the causal bodies, up all the way to the causal bodies and get a bit of an experience with them. But by tracking the bodies, so we start with this physical body, and then the first meditation is just going to be on the physical body. The second meditation is going to be the physical body, and then we'll go to the vital body. So you can begin to experience a shift. And then the third one would be the physical body again, vital body, and then we'll add the emotional body. And then we go back down to the vital, back down to the physical, all in this meditation. So the meditations are guided. And I'm going to see if I can help us learn how to not listen so much to my guidance, but pay attention to what you see along the guidance. And that's how you begin to get this awareness, and you begin to cultivate the awareness aspect instead of the learning aspect. You don't have to learn these bodies. You already have them. You just have to be aware of what are the indicators that they're present. What are the indicators of which body are you connected to? In the evening, we'll have a little bit of a talk to kind of like maybe just to touch on some things to help you get more understanding of the bodies. And then we'll have some questions so we can questions and answers and see how you are. Very little question and answer, because primarily you want to connect to the body itself and learn your answers from within. But because we're not going to have any interviews, I want to make sure there's some space for us to have some questions so you can feel a little bit more surety around it. All right, so then we'll do that on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we'll start with the subtler bodies, the etheric body, the astral body, and the intuitional body. And then we'll close out Sunday evening with a talk and answer whatever questions I have. After this, I'm going to start a class that starts on the 22nd of June. And so in that class, we can discuss more. I'm going to help you deepen into it a little bit more. But I'll tell you more about the class at the end of Saturday, or I'll put it on Sims's website. The problem with the class is it's only limited to 12 people, because I have to have enough capacity to talk to whoever's there and help you individually. So we'll just see. If it looks like I need to have more, then I'll have more another time. But the class that starts on the 22nd, I think there's 10, there might be 10 spots or 11 spots. I mean, or 9 spots. So let's see. I think this is all. Yeah, I think I probably should stop there. So let's just sit quietly here for a second. Kind of let these words go. I hope you feel the inspiration inside. That's what I feel. I have to just let that settle a little bit. So thank you for your kind attention.